Films, comics, and TV shows are more diverse now than they've ever been. Whether it's a gay Mr. Sulu, an Asian Incredible Hulk, or a new team of Ghostbusters, there's no escaping the new wave of diversity that's hitting all forms of media.
What do we think of these Ghostbusters? Are they to be taken seriously?
You take that aisle, I'll take the far one.
Okay, you sweaty freaks, I'm about to save you from this ghost! Ah!
Okay, so I don't know if it was a race thing or a lady thing, but I'm mad as hell.
On this week's Eastern Standard, a panel of media experts on the topic of diversification of mass media. It's a special encore edition of this award-winning show that aired in July of 2016. We're unable to take any listener calls or comments this morning, but we hope you'll enjoy checking it out and let us know what you think by writing to us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We'll hear more about diversity in mass media right after the news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen with a special encore broadcast. This program on diversity in mass media, which aired July 28th of 2016, received a first place award from the National Organization of Public Radio News Directors, PRNDI, or PRINDI, the Public Radio News Directors Incorporated. During this show, we began with examples of an African-American Spider-Man, women Ghostbusters, Asian-American Incredible Hulk, and a gay Mr. Sulu in last year's Star Trek movie, Mr. Sulu, already known as an Asian-American character. And of course, these media references are all about a year outdated at this point, and all in the realm of fiction, but we, of course, focused on nonfiction as well during the conversation. Since this is an encore show, we're unable to take any listener questions, comments, or stories at this time, but we sure would like to hear from you anyway. Write to us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at wekuest or call 859-622-1657. Did this program deserve an award? We're interested in your opinion. Beginning our program, I have two guests with me in the studio, and we'll be welcoming another shortly. But first up, I want to introduce back to the studios Dr. Lisa Day. And Lisa is director for the Women and Gender Studies Department at EKU. And as a faculty innovator, she has interests in American literature, trauma theory, feminist theory, along with directing women and gender studies. Certified instructor and faculty innovator. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Also with us, we are just meeting for the very first time. It's Dr. Yi Zhang.
Zhang.
Let's work on my pronunciation here. Li Zhang, also known as Charlie, is here with us this morning. And Charlie is assistant professor of gender and women's studies at the University of Kentucky. And his interests include social movements, gender across the world, feminist theory, queer theory, and LGBT studies, masculinity studies, body biopolitics in effect, queer of color analysis, transnational sexualities, gender, and sexuality in East Asia. We won't get into all of those topics, I suspect, but we're really grateful for your involvement in the show today.
Thank you for the invitation.
In just a little while, we will welcome our friend Dr. Michael A.J. Is he a doctor, PhD? I'm not sure. We'll double check with that. Michael A.J. Randolph. He's a public radio guy and an instructor on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University with their Department of Communications. All right, media diversity is the topic we wanted to pursue. And I have a group of student producers, younger folks who work with us in helping produce the show this week. And of course, this is a topic that has come forward in our conversations about something that we could discuss on the show. Again, related to some of this fictional stuff, the cartoonish presentations of shows like Ghostbusters, comic strips, other media, TV, and so forth. What is the status of media diversity? And I guess maybe why don't I start with Lisa Day? What are you perceiving in terms of the status of media diversity? Is our media reflective of our society in terms of its diversity?
Oh, gosh. We have such a long way to go. But I see that we're making some inroads. I think anytime someone points out an inequity or an inequality or a lack of representation in the media, some media groups scramble to make up for it and add a character or two, maybe a plot line. I think the 2015 Oscars So White hashtag campaign had a pretty good effect on raising some awareness across the country. And some people have even said it's not Oscars So White, it's Hollywood So White. So there have been some inroads. There needs to be a lot more work.
I mean, we think in terms of Hollywood as being a progressive place. We think of the left coast of the U.S.
Right.
We think in terms of a liberal values and perhaps, you know, the rest of the country tending to kind of follow along with what develops on the West Coast. But you're saying that in that whole Oscars So White realm is a pretty good example of that. That may be not necessarily so true.
It's not yet true.
Charlie Zhang, your perception of media, and again, you're working in the area of gender and women's studies. Where does media come into play in the work that you are doing? Is that something that's on the agenda and that's on the syllabus frequently as you're teaching?
Oh, yes, because I think that media system plays a huge role in shaping and reshaping people's perception of gender relationships and the racial relationships and LGBTQ issues becoming very hard and for a long time, and especially at this moment. So I think that's the two-way interaction. On the one hand, the media plays a huge role in shaping our understanding. On the other hand, the gender and race, those social systems played a huge role in structuring how media as a social part of the larger society is organized and operated to continue to reshape people. So it's functioning in two ways, and I think they are very closely related with each other.
I mean, I've been in media in some form for a few years, and I feel like there have been some massive changes that occurred. And I think back to the 70s, and I think about All in the Family, and I think about the TV series and or shows that in my lifetime, I grew up watching television in the 1950s when rarely did we see minority representation in media, except perhaps in news coverage. And all of a sudden, once in a while, a character would appear, a person of color, and then once in a while, characters of color would come to the forefront as a primary character rather than just background or supporting characters. I'm wondering why we're not farther along now than we would think we would have been after we went through the 60s and the 70s and all the social revolution that occurred in there. Any observations?
Patriarchy is an enormous and solid social structure in our culture. And patriarchy does not just mean men. You know, women can play a role in promoting patriarchy also. So it's as if the media outlets try to play to what they think the American viewing public wants, and it's not always accurate.
Yes. And also I think that the WHO is playing a big role in those big industries like what we just talked about, Hollywood. If you look at the producers and the directors and the number and the percentage of the men and women in those positions, and you will be shocked to see how low the number that women is in those positions. And if you have so few women involved in those very important positions, and their perspectives are rarely represented in those productions, and if your view of the world is not represented in those productions, and it's also reinforcing and reproducing the very rigid view of the world from men's point, I think that's continuing this cycling process, and it's hard to break that.
We're going to invite our listeners to get involved in this conversation with questions, comments, and observations. And again, we're glad to have some fun with this topic and talk about your favorite, shall we say, more diverse characters in media today and things that you're seeing or you're observing, with, of course, very serious reflections on the needs for as that you would perceive of more diversity in media. So please feel free to get in touch with us, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, or call 800-621-8890. Talking a little bit about fiction here, but I would be totally remiss if I did not mention Roger Ailes of Fox News. And Lisa brought that up, talking about the patriarchy system. Sadly, old white guys with white hair, the category I'm in, have been in charge of an awful lot of what goes on. How do we observe something like this? And I'm sorry, the name of the anchor who raised the complaint of sexual harassment at Fox News? It wasn't Megyn Kelly, is it?
Megyn Kelly.
Is it Megyn Kelly? But the question raised that apparently, this guy's running a major news operation and is putting out expectations of deference to him, to put it mildly, as a male in charge. This is the patriarchy you're talking about.
That is indeed the patriarchy. And I want to add that just because you're a certain demographic, you mentioned several characteristics of your own demographic, John,
right,
that does not mean that you're patriarchal.
No, I'm sure.
You are not. I know that about you. So, Roger Ailes does not have to do the things that he's done just because he's a member of that demographic. But it sure does give a bad rap for everyone else who's in that demographic.
And that's one of the issues of diversity in general. Mm-hmm. When we look to people as races or as genders or within their sexual orientation or other characteristics that may be identifying factors, that there's no such thing as generalizing, of course. But I mean, this would be an example. Would we say, again, from way, way distant and outside the doors, that there had been in this organization perhaps a culture of the women participating in the patriarchy?
Absolutely.
They've consented to it, and they helped make it happen.
Absolutely. The female broadcasters who were hired by Roger Ailes say that he made them, during an interview, he made them stand and turn around in a 360 so that he could look at their legs and their body. That shouldn't matter in a news broadcast, but he was making it matter. That's what mattered to him. He wanted to present this sexualized view of women who would be reporting the news that he had chosen for them to present.
Charlie Zhang, as a male, as mm-hmm. a person of Asian background from China,
yes.
Why your interest in gender studies and interest in women?
Oh, I think that's a very great question. And I think gender and also race on the surface level, many students will think, oh, it's just about our personal identity, to be a man, to be a woman, to be a white guy or Asian woman or a gay man. But actually, gender and race and sexuality, they are very important part of our larger social systems. And if you look at why we have seen so many new characters of color from different background, which is related with the larger changes in the global economy, and because recently we have so many new forms of or new groups of immigrant workers coming to the U.S., that's why we see the different kind of representations of them.
I want to come back to that area about what's in it for us guys to be more acknowledging of the role of women, what's in it for the whites to recognize the role of persons of color in our society. Diversity in media, our topic on this week's Eastern Standard, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKU EST, 800-621-8890.
Mr. Sua, you can fly this thing, right?
You kidding me, sir?
Let's hope this doesn't get messy.
Ruin a guy.
You know the drill.
What is this?
I know your kind.
It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Diversity in media, the topic on this week's show. A little clip there from, I guess that's the trailer for Star Trek. Is it called Star Trek Beyond? The Star Trek expert has just arrived.
Yes. Trekkie from way back.
As a matter of fact, he transported in. Michael A.J. Randolph, thank you. I just called you doctor.
I know that. I'm glad for the elevation.
I realize.
Do I get a pay raise with this faux doctor thing?
As far as I am able to do, you got it.
Thank you.
Michael is an old friend, has been with us before. He's helped fundraise at WEKU. By way of full disclosure, we go to church together, so I'm glad to have him as part of our panel. We're talking about diversity in media, and if you've been listening, Michael, stuck on the traffic on the Eastern Bypass, we talked a little bit about fiction, and we stepped into the Roger Ailes newsroom as well for a moment here. And perhaps I'd like to get you to catch us up in terms of your sense of the status of diversity in media.
I'm going to say something that is, I'm going to contradict myself twice. We are right now in the most diverse media environment ever known. If you're, let's say, a gay, Republican, business-owning male who wants to play in the NBA, you can get online and find some site that will fit what you're looking for. So the stuff is out there for every small demographic. But when we think about what we call mainstream media, what we're seeing is ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, MSNBC. They're all playing to small and smaller demographics. And so it's not reflecting what we would consider diversity, whether it be race or gender or sexual orientation out there. It's like, okay, what are we seeing that advertisers are going to go for and support and bring us the most money? And in this fractured media world, bring us the most eyeball.
And that's the bottom line. The bottom line remains the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
How much money can we make off of the media? So if we make money off of diversity, we'll do diversity. If we make more money off of the mainstream, the perceived mainstream culture, that's where we do it.
Think about it. You know, you and I are pretty similar in age. When I graduated from undergraduate school in 1981, you know, I could go to an outlet called like Radio and Records, which was a big magazine, just talk about the top 10 or top 50 songs, or Broadcasting Magazine, and go to the classified section and find pages of just radio jobs, radio news jobs. Because you had basically, you'd start up in a small town working for a mom and pop radio station, cut your teeth, and then build your way up, you know, to bigger markets. Most of those small town radio stations or mom and pop operations have been Walmarted. They've been taken over by, you know, Clear Channel, IHA, whatever it's called right now, other major corporations. So you're not seeing the diversity of voices anymore. Now they're all repeater stations for nationally syndicated programs.
And Michael, since we are friends, we can talk honestly here. You say, I could find those jobs. Okay, you're an African-American, raised in New York, got a little of that accent remaining.
Yeah, it bounced back every now. All those years in Ohio didn't totally destroy it.
So, I mean, was that an issue for you? Did doors open for you because you were not part of the mainstream white broadcasting community?
And that's one of those things where it's hard to tell. You can't, you know, nobody's going to come out and say, I didn't hire you because you were black or whatever. You know, they will find other excuses, legitimate or not. So it's, you know, I can't stand here and say, I did not get this post, I did not get this job because of my race. I remember going to a Association of Black Journalists convention, and they talked about LinkedIn. And they said, you may want to consider, if you're a person of color, when you're putting your LinkedIn profile up there, not to put your picture. Because people will sometimes look at that picture and, well, you know, no matter how good your resume is, that may be the first thing that strikes them and may want to move on.
Even in a world where businesses were trying to recruit minorities, trying to recruit females, trying to diversify.
Unfortunately, even in my own hiring situation here, I know that there was some concern that would I be able to fit into the culture of Eastern Kentucky University? Now, I don't think it's blatant overall racism, but, you know, all birds of a feather flock together. And we all feel comfortable around people who we believe reflect some of the same thoughts and patterns and lifestyles that we've all grown up with.
Michael A.J. Randolph is a lecturer in the Department of Communications after a long career in broadcasting and education. I should actually introduce you, I guess. Thank you again for being here with us. Also with us on this week's Eastern Standard, Dr. Lisa Day, Director of Women and Gender Studies at EKU. And we have with us Dr. Yi Zhang, I think I got it, also known as Charlie, Assistant Professor of Gender and Women's Studies at the University of Kentucky. And when we before we took a break, we talked about the fact I wanted to come back to this topic of got a male interested in gender studies. What is the value to us males to promote the cause of involvement of women in our society in a more inclusive manner? What's the motivation for the middle to older aged white men, the Roger Ailes of the world, or others who have been in positions of power, to begin to draw in others and to empower? The bottom line question always comes back to what's in it for me?
Okay, so when we talk about gender women studies, it's not just about women, because we talk about gender as a social system that is impacting everybody in a different way. So we do talk about men from the gender perspective. For example, why so many heterosexual white men, they are struggling actually when they go through those moments. They have to pass different kinds of tests and they have to do different things to be able to join the fraternity groups on campus, which turned out sometimes, in many cases, turned out to be very violent, and sometimes it's pretty bad. They have to, for example, the rape culture is pretty prominent in many places, and they have to show to their peers to be able to be part of this culture, to be able to join those clubs. In many cases, they don't actually, when they are just by themselves, they actually don't like those kind of things, but they have to show that to the public. So this is one way, one example to show that gender actually is playing a big role in creating a very bad social environment that is impacting many boys and men as well. We needed to challenge those very rigid gender role and make it more inclusive and broader so everybody can just do something the way they really want to. So gender women studies in general is not just about creating or challenging the gender role for women, but also as for men as well.
We turn back to Dr. Lisa Day. And Lisa, I'm thinking that we have had this term that's been in use for a decade or more of culture war, and I really don't want to go here with the politics, but in the midst of the Democratic convention wrapping up and last week's Republican convention, seems to me like there's a contrast. There's a contrast in terms of views of the world. Is there a majority that is interested in minority inclusiveness, if it's just the only way it's going to happen? Or are we, you know, right down the middle someplace where society is, you're on one side or the other, baby, and that's it?
I think the media wants us to believe that there's one side or another, but there's never just one versus another. It's always an amalgamation. There are always little niches within each one of those groups that isn't following a, quote, party line. So I don't think it's such a binary division. I also think that in the past 8 years that underrepresented groups are finally getting some representation. Many people in politics, especially in the higher offices, are starting to look like our underrepresented groups.
And I guess we're going to find out after this election if that's working for the Democrats, for instance, because this convention, I feel like it's very different than the one from 8 years ago that nominated Barack Obama. Certainly much different than the one to which Barack Obama first spoke a dozen years ago.
Correct.
And Barack Obama had to be dragged into the LGBTQ realm by his vice president, did he not?
I don't think he was dragged into it. I think Joe Biden represents concerns of women as well as the sexuality diversity component. But I think Barack Obama is very intelligent. and he is able to see nuances. So I don't think he was all about dismissing entire groups.
There are those who are critical of Hillary and her involvement in those issues as well, which we would say that's politics, that's being intelligent, that's weighing whether and how that's going to play to the audience.
Exactly.
I mean, I can't argue the point. The problem with media, per se, or mainstream media, if we want to call it right. that, is that they look for the loudest and the most, I'm not going to say the most absurd, but the definite dog bites man thing. You know, nobody wants to hear about the second grade teacher who's, you know, gotten all students to pass, you know, the proficiency test and they're doing really well. They want to hear about the schools that are failing. They don't want to hear about the thousands of Black Lives Matter protesters who go out there peacefully every day raising a concern. They want to hear about the crazy ones who, you know, shoot at police and cause riots and make mistakes. We like the extremes because that sells newspapers, that gets people's eyeballs on the TV, that gets people turning in. And John, you and I have been in the news business long enough. Conflict is what we look for in stories.
Well, and there was a storyline on the night of the Dallas shootings that this was a reaction to the Black Lives Matter rally.
And it could be. I mean, you know, unfortunately, we look for reasons behind. When Gabby Giffords was shot a few years ago, you saw some lines coming out. Well, it was because of something that Sarah Palin had said. You know, you had the Dallas police shootings. It's because of something that happened with Black Lives Matter. You got the guy who was shooting up the gay club in Orlando. Well, he was influenced by ISIS. Nobody really knows what makes crazy people do crazy things, but it makes nice, good sound bites for politicians so they can link it to one side or another because it builds up their particular audience.
Diversity in the media, our topic on this week's Eastern Standard, and we certainly want to talk about the news, and we've hopefully not too much more politics. dipped into that a little bit. We do want to talk about journalism, diversity in journalism. We want to talk about fiction. We'll talk about the comic strips, talk about the latest Ghostbusters and other fictional productions. So let's go ahead and talk to listeners. I wonder if our listener, Trevor, who called in earlier, is still on the line, as we invite you to pick up the phone and call 800-621-8890. Are you there, Trevor?
Yeah, I'm here.
But thank you for waiting. Go right ahead. Sorry for putting you through all that politics discussion if that's not what you called about.
That's okay. I just wanted to say real quick that if anybody wants to check out a great list of diverse, exciting, diverse characters, I just wanted to urge everybody maybe to head down to your local comic shop. There's a lot of things, a lot of really, you know, great progressive things going on in comics right now that I think, you know, they're really branching out and reaching a whole new audience. And if I could just real quick kind of give a brief rundown of some of the more popular characters right now.
Sure. Love to have those examples.
Over at Marvel, we've got right now a female Thor. The actual Wolverine, the main character of the Wolverine series right now, is female. We have an African-American Captain America. Upcoming later on this year, it's been announced that a new person is going to wear the Iron Man suit in the pages of the Iron Man comic book, and it's actually going to be a teenage girl, African-American teenage girl. So that's been making some headlines. Spider-Man, actually, right now, Peter Parker's still around, but the main character in the main Spider-Man book is a half Latino, half black kid. Named Miles Morales, and he's been around for a while, and he's become a very popular character. We have a Muslim character wearing a Green Lantern ring over at DC, as well as there's a gay Green Lantern character who's a major character in another comic series called Earth 2. And then one of the more popular headlines as far as comic books is concerned recently, one of the more major headlines I should say, is a lesser known publisher called Aftershock Comics, who is actually gaining steam, and they're, you know, doing more and more exciting things every day, but they have announced that they're going to publish a book called Alters later this year, and to my knowledge it's going to be the first book to feature a transgendered hero as the main character. So again, just, you know, a lot of great things going on in comic books that no matter what your background is, no matter who you are, I think if you walk into the comic book store, look on the shelves, you're going to find something for you, something that you can relate to. A lot of great characters out there.
Well, Trevor, let me ask you this. So what does this say about the consumers of these comic book materials? Is this still a younger demographic, as one would stereotype? Does this say that this younger demographic is open-minded and thinking in a diverse-minded manner? Or are there divisions there, too? Are these the same people playing Grand Theft Auto? Are these the same people? Don't those seem a little bit non-inclusive?
Well, I think whenever I look at it, just as a comic book fan, and I mean, I'm no expert or anything, I just like comic books, and I just, you know, I read a lot of comics. But I see a correlation, because right now it seems to be that comics is kind of entering into, I don't know if you call it another golden age or not, but they're very popular again. I mean, comic book sales are very healthy right now, and I think that has a lot to do with the openness that the creators have in terms of, you know, giving some minority characters, you know, more diverse characters, more important roles in, you know, the main titles. I mean, we're talking about Captain America, Spider-Man, Thor. You know, in previous years where you never would have imagined that, you know, Thor would be a woman. Well, that's now happened. And same goes for an African-American Spider-Man or an African-American Captain America. I mean, some of these things are just, they're much more accepted, and they're not only accepted, but it's encouraged by the base of comic book readers. And, I mean, it's exciting, you know, and it's good stories, they're good characters, and I think the sales of comic books have proven that's, you know, that's something that people want to see. So,
well, Trevor, that's great food for thought. Thank you for being part of our conversation on this week's Eastern Standard at 800-621-8890. Reactions.
I think Trevor makes an interesting point. I mean, I'm thinking about when I was a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s, you know, Saturday morning was our favorite time. And so you'd sit down in front of the TV set and you'd watch all these cartoons and you'd watch all the superheroes and things like that. And it was like,
and
okay.
Weren't most of them white?
Not most, all.
Oh, okay.
The only time I saw a black character on Saturday morning cartoons was on Tom and Jerry, when they had this one character called Mammy Two Shoes. And you never really saw her face. All you saw was her lower body, but she was a stereotypical type of, you know, heavyset maid from what you saw in Gone with the Wind.
But I just flashed on Fat Albert.
Oh, I forgot about Fat Albert later on. Very true. But what's interesting is that when I'm teaching my media and society class, Trevor's a perfect example of how when things come new, the old school thinking feels challenged. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing now with this diversity thing is that the powers that be, things we've grown up with, we feel uncomfortable with.
We're going to come back for another segment of this week's Eastern Standard, talking about diversity in the media, from comic books to cartoons to fictional movies to drama to TV journalism. And other media, maybe even video games, I don't know. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com.
How could she find the strength and I couldn't? Every other case that we've researched, it's been the same story over and over and over again. What is the common denominator? I'm angry.
Waiting for that punchline from Bill Bixby from the 1970s series of the Incredible Hulk. And, of course, Bill couldn't quite work up the muscles to play the other part of his role, so he needed a little help from Lou Ferrigno to play that role. A little flashback to 40 years ago, and not really all that diverse. I guess we didn't quite know what, you know, the Hulk was just a white man who turned green.
Right.
In the course of his reaction to situations. We're talking diversity in media on this week's Eastern Standard. You're welcome to be part of the show at 800-621-8890. A little bit of the fictional to the real world, and talking journalism and hosting of programs and things of that nature. Are we seeing increasing diversity? Is there a need for increased diversity? Is what we're seeing merely, for lack of a better term, I can't think of a better term, whitewash? It's, mm-hmm. You know, we're painted over to make it look like we're now diverse, as opposed to a genuine infrastructure in the system. Again, the Roger Ailes situation bringing out the fact that there's perhaps some corruption and some things underlying that need to be addressed. Our guest in the studio, Dr. Lisa Day, Director of Women and Gender Studies at EKU. We have Charlie Zhang, Dr. Yi Zhang, Assistant Professor of Gender and Women's Studies at the University of Kentucky, and Michael A.J. Randolph, Lecturer in the Department of Communications at EKU. And Lisa, wanted to get you back into the conversation. You were reacting to some of what we've been saying about comic book characters, fictional characters, and maybe the issue of women and the relationship to the roles that men have traditionally played in a lot of media.
Thank you. I want to respond to something that Trevor was pointing toward. He was saying that comics are representing this new shift in our media consumption, and I completely agree, and I've appreciated seeing that return. I also see in bringing comics to the screen this push toward speculative forms of heroism. And by speculative, I'm referring to a genre. The science fiction, speculative fiction genre has always been just a few steps ahead of other literary genres as well as culture. And it seems as if our culture sometimes adapts the things that have been depicted in science fiction and in comics gradually. Robert Heinlein is an example of that. Some of his ideas, Isaac Asimov, of course, some of his ideas have made it into reality. But one of the things that I want to challenge, that I think comics do challenge, is this notion of putting diverse characters into popular mainstream media and giving them a rite of passage with showing them committing violence.
They have to live up to what the male characters used to do.
Yes, it seems as
not
if
a transformation from the masculine characteristics or expression of violence to more female values.
Is it also where they also have to live up to, since this perception of what the American white male culture has presented? So I remember years ago when Julia came out with Diane Carroll, they just basically said they took a white character, put a black face on it, but she still had to act in what was perceived as the culture, so she wasn't going to be any different than anybody else.
Exactly. Some feminist theorists nowadays, Caroline Heldman and Jessica Valenti in particular, have referred to a character trope in mainstream media, and I'm not going to use the exact term they use. I'm going to switch out a term, and they refer to it as the fighting sex toy. And it seems like many women characters, especially in action movies and in superhero movies, the female characters have to be very sexualized. You know, Wonder Woman is the first example of it. Why does she have to wear a leotard with no pants when all the other male characters, male heroes, have to wear pants, for example? But, you know, one of the things that I think Ghostbusters effectively does is to show that these women are not fighting sex toys. They're not sexualized in Ghostbusters at all. There's some hint of a romantic attraction between the Kristen Wiig character and the Chris Hemsworth character, but it's never brought to fruition.
Now, one of my producers, who I think is an expert on such matters, says the movie's not very good, though.
I
mean, is that an issue too? We diversify and we try to do some great stuff, but then the viewer goes, oh, I don't care about that one.
Well, I think part of that response is that the movie is not based on popular tropes anymore. It's not continuing that trope of the sex plot or the romance plot. It's not following the popular idea of a man saving the day. You know, it goes against so many plot structures that I think a lot of people left the theater thinking, ooh, yuck.
Charlie Zhang, let's get you into this conversation. What are you thinking about what you're hearing so far? We talk about, you know, again, a man working pursuing gender studies and trying to encourage diversity in our society. What are you thinking about how these media portrayals are having that what effect are they having?
I think it's great to include different characters from different backgrounds, but still we've seen that the representation of the diversity within even those groups of minority, for example, the representation of LGBTQ communities, still we can see that who gets represented, middle class white men with a lot of consumption power who live in San Francisco and New York City, and we see those representation portrayed all the times, but why we cannot see the faces like a transgender woman of color, why we cannot see poor, I mean, gay immigrant from Asia. It's hard, very hard to see that. So while we have seen this kind of new trend of diversification within the media system, but still the relatively privileged subgroups within those groups of minority, they get a voice and the other voice get washed out. I think that's one of the issues we needed to think more. For example, there are recently, because of the successful promotion of the Korean popular culture, and we have seen so many Asian influence in the U.S. Popular culture industry, but we still see the very, very stereotypical representation of especially Asian men, Asian women in those popular culture. For example, I was watching one of the very popular Asian male actor. His name is King Jo, and he was used in the demographic the convention, and he was used. So the way to portray Asian male is still either very, very technical or geeky, very geek guy, technical guy, or the martial arts like Bruce Lee. So it's still very stereotypical. Why we cannot diversify the representation of those people? We do have a lot of people from those background. We needed to just pay attention to that, I think.
I'm interested in your observation about the getting women into these roles of having to, you know, to perform the macho, the male rites of passage. Is that part of your mission in life, pursuing gender studies to help move us beyond those boxes in which we have to live, that women have to act like women in the traditional values of women and men have to live up to the traditional values and characteristics of men?
I think that's what we needed to challenge. That's what we need to break down. And I think I definitely agree with what Lisa was talking about. The way to incorporate women into those representation of cosmic production and why we needed to just put them into those violent characters. It's not about that way of diversification is actually reproducing, reinforcing the very rigid gender role. Now the male standard becomes the standard for everybody. A woman has to live up to those kind of thing to be able to be heard by the society. For example, like Hillary Clinton, she has to behave in a very, very male way to be considered to be important as a politician. So, and we do see those kind of representation that's still part of the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking diversity in media on this week's Eastern Standard. Lines open for you if you'd like to be part of the conversation, 800-621-8890. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com is our email address, and you can send a tweet at WEKUEST. We had a message from a caller who didn't want to stay on the line. What about male models of power, dispersion of power, now more diverse? I guess this caller is saying that the power is now diverse or dispersed among men and women, at least. Power in the world adapting more power, but power remains hierarchical. What's the difference between when the faces of the powerful people become more diverse, but the distribution of power seems to come from already powerful families? Powerful families, okay. We're talking about the perhaps Clintons and the Bushes, and families that have been powerful in politics or in leadership situations. Kind of coming back to the roots that we have this patriarchal system in place, where this system that in which power has already been in place. What breaks that? What opens it up in such a way that allows for genuine diversity in thought, rather than merely changing the faces on the performers?
And I mean, it's just something that you mentioned in just the first segment, talking a little bit about the culture wars. America is always continuing to reinvent itself. And as media is continuing to expand, the question comes out, does media reflect those changes? Does media cause those changes? It's very easy to bash what you see on TV saying it's causing juvenile delinquency or teen pregnancy or it's eroding American values. But American values are always trying to, I would believe, we're always looking for our best natures as we're growing up. But then who, if I, lift up the gay and lesbian community, or I lift up the Black community, or I lift up the non-religious community, am I fighting against the Judeo-Christian values that this country has supposed to have been founded on? Am I going against traditional family values? Am I eroding what has been, the subtle type of manifest destiny that has always been the quote-unquote backbone of American society? And people get scared of diversity because it seems to say that, one society is bad, that white society is bad because we want to see more people of color, more representation for women, more representation from the LGBT community. And that's where this culture battle continues to go on, and the media will sometimes exploit it and then sometimes not talk about it at all.
When did this all happen? I mean, we're in a nation that was based on the lives and the work of immigrants, and that welcomes people with a Statue of Liberty and "Give me your tired, your poor" slogan, and so forth. I mean, did this concentration of power in media occur when mass media became possible, when major newspapers became possible, when radio became possible, and the white male strong announcer voice became the powerful means of communication through the broadcasting technology?
I think America has always been an oligarchy. I think money has always controlled our culture. But I think, coming back to the fiction and the science fiction type of reality that we're seeing in mass media, the zombie genre is one of my favorites, because it does not matter how much money you have. You're going to be eaten by a zombie, and you're going to become a zombie.
You're going to be walking around stiff-legged.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there's something to say about the zombie trope in general, that it's about consumption. People consuming each other. And I think that's what's happened to our culture a lot of times. We're a consumer culture. We're about consumption. But I think the zombies just say, hey, you're all going to be consumed if you continue this lifestyle.
Wow. We have 3 minutes to fill after that profound statement. Which, seriously, that sounds like an interesting way to kind of wrap up the conversation. Where are we headed? How can we know? How will we know when we have a more diverse media environment in our country and in our world? And is America unique? I mean, Charlie, Yi Zhang, have you lived in China? Are you familiar? I mean, what's it like there? Is there diversity in the media in China?
I think that's an interesting question, because with China has this increasing economic power of China, and we also see that the focus of the Chinese media has shifted away from the representation of working class people and the peasants, which was a very big deal during the Maoist era, the socialist era. Now, because China is marketized in such a very powerful way, and the focus has completely shifted to middle class, to those bourgeois, the middle class nuclear family with one husband and one wife and children, the fancy condos, apartments, or houses. So it has completely shifted to the different end. So in terms of diversification, and I don't think that there's such kind of awareness or consciousness.
Perhaps
of,
more homogenization
yes,
going on.
Yes,
at this
more
point.
Homogenization, I would say that.
In general, in our society, Michael and Lisa, let me get you each to give me 30 seconds or a minute about where do we need to go? What needs to change?
I hate to get political again, but I'm going to. You know, in other countries, it seems as if America has this perception that we are the empire of the gun. And at the Salzburg Global Seminar last year when I attended, that's what one of the scholars who taught the seminar called us. And I think if we're going to change perceptions, we've got to change not only the figureheads, but we've got to change cultural beliefs and what everybody thinks are cultural beliefs. We've got a long way to go. We are making some headway. I see lots of positive things, but we've got
maybe,
a long way to go.
Maybe starting in the comic strips.
I think it is.
Mm-hmm. And I think it goes back to a point we made a little earlier. It's like things will change when people realize that the fear that's drummed up by the extremes on both ends isn't the reality. You know, people, 1960s was the, you know, to me, the second civil war in the United States. And yet we saw a growth in civil rights, which led to LGBT rights, which led to diversification. We still got a long way to go because, again, it's when you see other people starting to rise that those who've been in power for so long feel the most afraid, and they tend to have the power to be able to raise the fear bells. But, you know, whether we all like it to admit it or not, we're living in the greatest country in the world, and no matter who wins the presidency, we're going to be in good shape.
Michael A.J. Randolph, lecturer in the Department of Communications at EKU. Lisa Day, director of Women and Gender Studies at EKU. Charlie Zhang, assistant professor of Gender and Women's Studies at the University of Kentucky. Thank you all for this interesting conversation. Our show repeats on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. The podcast will be up on the website at weku.fm by Thursday afternoon. Write to us at weku eastern standard at gmail.com. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thank you for being with us.